broadcast where?
We broadcast where?
And so we're actually broadcasting what we're saying actually is translated literally.
It's hard to hear because the room is so echoey. And all of those mics get mixed down into this little
Mm-hmm.
channel.
Okay. Boy, this is gonna be good. Let's stay here for a run all afternoon. It's interesting, the first thing that you said about, here's voyeurism, gaze, here's the oral gaze, big time, oral gaze, I'm not even on it. The fact that you're not so concerned that the dialogue can't be heard, per se, it's interesting to me that it's not about, per se, communicating information is about this intersecting means of public access, just fairly structural.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I wouldn't say that I'm interested in communicating information that way.
Okay.
I'm not that interested in communicating information that is here.
Today.
And I'm also pretty very, very much interested in the difficulties communicating information,
the
difficulties that ordinary people have to ask
in order
for
actually. So your other events, they also go onto the web and onto the radio, and those are your fear. We can hear what's happening.
They're supposed to hear it.
They're supposed to hear it.
I use a wireless microphone,
mm-hmm.
and it could be on.
Is that something you would have wanted some flexibility in? Is it important to have the museum? connectivity of these various sites from virtual to real. I find that really interesting. And so that's why you said in some cases you can't really hear the dialogue.
More about this constant attempt to make those connections.
somehow be neutral, and our involvement in it should be pure, and it should be safe in every location. What strikes me is how Tim's event reveals the publicness of every space and the surveillance of every space that happens in so many different ways. It might be how you inform people of how they're being surveilled as much as what happens when they realize and how they acknowledge their complicitness in that. And I can see a great deal of responsibility going back to the participant in this piece for an awareness of where their body, private life begins and the public space, private space begins where the public space begins, or ends and begins.
Yes, it's very effective in that there's a movement around here as a child and I approach. Once I learned, I stayed far away from him. You have effectively silenced me.
You've chosen.
I guess I have chosen.
I don't feel like it's a part of it. Yeah, I'm not sure.
square. Whenever you start laying the same formal square over lots of different things, it has this simultaneously sort of flattening effect and also highlights differences. And to answer your question, I start looking at things like, okay, let's look at one particular event that Sarah mentioned. This one event happened in the park. Teenagers talking about housing and education. I'll begin thinking about, okay, here's one square in which there's no voluntary discussion going on, in which it's primarily a listening post. There's another square in which what we would call a voluntary discussion is taking place. And I would begin to look at all the other things that make those squares black or different. And it begins to be interesting for me, for example, to see that the square that in that instance is functioning as a more surveillance site is the square that actually has permission to be there. Whereas the square in which there's a permitted discussion going on is taking place in a space where it didn't have any kind of specific institutional permission to be there. And those differences start to get interesting.
In a way that maybe reinforces some of the quality of that,
seems to deal with contingency except for the archive. And I'm not sure, it seems like the archive is following a more traditional model of documentation of a performance. And I'm wondering how that can be situated. I mean, is it just...
Is it possible that maybe it's brings out the fact that she's maybe doing something with this work? Like, I mean, in previous, the thing that I think is really interesting about this is that it seems like a form of work with Sarah, in which she's sort of maybe identifying a problem rather than, and this is really like sort of overarching and kind of not very analytical, but it seems to me that she's activating something with this work that hasn't been active before, and I don't know if I'm really getting my mind around it. But one thing that I was really wondering about, which I couldn't say something, was about the fact that this is all sitting on the floor. And I remember when I first saw it, I thought it was really kind of overdramatic and trying to dress up something that might otherwise be seen as sort of bland. But there's something about the fact all the microphones in the circle that speaks to me about exactly what Tim said, which, you know, and I don't really have a lot of sympathy or empathy for somebody who can't see her coming on the microphone. I mean, that's what a microphone does. And I don't think that Sarah Brown should have to be responsible for, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to mean.
But I wonder what the present and past relationship, because there's such a moment where these events are live and then they're not live. Maybe you could.
Yeah. I think the way I thought about it is in terms of audience and scale. So there's a series of ranges that each of these groups gets and turn the light from the next in terms of audience. And the putting of these things in an archive allows for a connection to the game beyond like the I think it's kind of very dramatic place about having living sisters and a connection to their native people, but I also wanted to be able to suggest something elsewhere. I've been in conversation with another radio pirates around the country who are interested in another form of networking that extends beyond the radio broadcast to the online streaming demand. And to me, that's very important for discussing our struggles locally to be somehow more universal concerns. So that's one of the that's the reason why I get it. I think we feel like we're less in terms of. Well, I also thought about it in terms of this that you said this notion of permanence and permission and temporary and uncommitted, and I wanted a second to permit the presence.
I'm really interested in how when you change the scale, what happens to the data, and how does the data change? And I know that you can't really be responsible for all of that, but
I think the highlight is the use of the word public. The same way she uses the square everywhere, and then we have to see what's different. She keeps saying, this is a public conversation, and this is a public conversation. And in one sense, it's a public conversation in which a bunch of people are invited to a site and they happen. And it only happens at the same time, in the same space for everyone. Other instances, it's a public conversation that is happening live that other people have the potential to tune into. And this third, the archive, it still presents itself and calls itself a public conversation. And yet it's this very dispersed, solitary experience in which there's no shared time or shared space. And so I think it ends up interrogating that question of public through continuing to claim that label for conversations that have very different temporal spatial models and phenomena of existence.
That's a very good idea. One thing that becomes really important to show that, which is essentially a formal sort of thing. The notion of the problem with the archive is formal and to a certain extent referential in terms of the alignment of reference about community communities and that kind of thing.
is it going on both channels? Structurally,
yeah.
That would make sense.
You can start there.
Okay.
Suzanne is next.
What did you say?
Meeting.